Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. It is my pleasure each week to have an opportunity to talk to one of the, well, to my way of thinking, heroes of that war. She is Diana West, a great patriot and stalwart on behalf of freedom. She chronicles it brilliantly in her blogs at dianawest.net. She has helped provide the intellectual framework in which to understand so many of the challenges we're facing in her two best-selling books, Death of the Grown-Up and American Betrayal. And of course, I enjoy our conversations tremendously, so I'm delighted to have her back, for one, in the aftermath of President Trump's rather remarkable and I think overall extraordinarily impressive State of the Union address last night. Diana West, welcome. Glad to have a chance to visit with you about that and more.
Thank you so much, Frank. Wonderful to be with you.
So, what did you make of it? I've put in my commentary that I kind of regarded it as a love letter to America. Do you see it that way?
Yes, I do. I think that's a beautiful way to put it. I think it was a remarkable address, a remarkable performance. I found his delivery to be masterful and to summon candidate Trump in the sense of commanding the stage, but in every kind of presidential way. It was very beautifully delivered. I think that the highs were really something we all needed to hear. We needed to hear this. I think the dramatic moments were extremely meaningful. The incorporation into the whole experience, into the national experience, really, of the tragedies, for example, of the Otto Warmbier family, the parents of the daughters who were killed by MS-13, bringing them in was not, it did not strike me as we often see in the laundry list kinds of State of the Union moments where people who sort of exemplify a particular program are highlighted and thanked. This seems more to incorporate these personal tragedies into our experience, to share them in that setting seemed extremely meaningful and very effective.
I felt that way particularly of this moment when he singled out the young man who had lost literally his limbs in the process of seeking to free himself from the despotic, threatening, and brutally repressive regime in North Korea. And when he got up and he waved those pathetic examples of hand-built crutches, it really seemed to me to be sort of galvanizing in a way that wasn't just another, you know, toss of a tip of the hat, I should say, I guess maybe to somebody up in the bleachers. And Diana, you know, as you reflect on it, of course, one of the low points, I think we would probably agree, was the president's further embrace of the idea that he would be willing, assuming there is an agreement with the Democrats, which seems at the moment unlikely, to have a deal on amnesty for millions of DACA people and people who claim to be DACA people. Talk a little bit about your thoughts on that. As a longtime Trump supporter, were you troubled by that, as was I?
Deeply troubled. And I would say that in the context of the State of the Union as a performance, this was certainly a low moment. It is a betrayal of his most basic promise. It's hard to reckon with the rest of his stance, his attitude, and his summoning of presidential power that seems so patently, you know, palpable practically in this address that he would concede right from the get-go a number like 1.8 million to be amnestied, which as the kind of negotiator that he has had to be all of his business career seems so foolish, so reckless, because of course you don't start with your ceiling, and to imagine that there might be negotiations that would indeed increase such a number in the context of compromise and all of that, I don't understand that, and that was a great blow in an otherwise, you know, wonderful kind of national moment.
Really, national moment. I think that's a lovely way to put it. I do want to make sure, before we run out of time, that I ask you about the Democrats, because that was my other principal takeaway, as I think it was for just about all of us. You know, here he is, he's hitting pitch perfectly these odes to America and to you know, its principles, its values, its symbols even. And they sat on their hands or crossed their arms. They were passive aggressive or actively hissing at him. And I wonder whether the American people more generally, Diana, not just those of us who admire the president and those sort of themes, were not simply put off, but really appalled by what was going on with the partisan Democrats.
I would imagine so. I mean, when you see the other major party in America not standing up for veterans, not standing up for jobs, not standing up for the lowest levels of black unemployment, the Black Caucus not standing up. I mean, these were moments that I would imagine, you know, the flip side of the highlights. These are just lowlights in American politics. I will say that in terms of theater, my one biggest complaint about the State of the Union last night was that there was not a continuous camera on Nancy Pelosi in black, chewing her lips, looking down, looking sour. I mean, this was every time the camera went to her, it was a fantastic counterpoint just in terms of what they were trying to project, listening to the President of the United States in that chamber. Absolutely historic bad taste and I think bad politics. I cannot imagine that appeals to anybody, the most hardest core left, who actually wishes the country ill, because that, in a sense, is what they were showing. They were not happy with any of the markers of achievement that we should all celebrate as Americans, no matter who's in the White House.
But even beyond the achievement, I mean, in a way, it was really just what we're about, what we have stood for, what, as I say, are our symbols. Diana, speaking of the left, I did want to just very quickly do another hat tip, I think, to you for what has become a very important series at your website, dianawetz.net. You talk about the red threat as a subtext, if not actually the leitmotif of the whole so-called collusion saga, the alleged collusion by President Trump and his people with the Russians. Give us your current reading on all of that, if you would.
Yes, well, thank you. What I'm trying to do essentially is restore the context of understanding the threat to our country, which can come from enemies foreign and domestic. This has essentially been erased from our comprehension, and in studying the different players involved in the, what you and I certainly have talked about as being an attempted coup against this president, many others are coming to that realization, I've been trying to examine what their perspective on politics, on ideology is, simply for the fact that there is nothing normal about this extremely dangerous and indeed criminal behavior that we're finding evidence of on losing an election. We have elections, national elections, every 2 years, presidential elections every 4 years. The party who loses goes out of power and then comes back. There is no good, normal reason for this kind of conspiratorial plotting and subordination of our institutions that we are seeing. So what I'm looking for is what greater thing than simply the fortunes of Hillary Clinton might motivate these people. And I am finding hard ideological leftist ideology in the person, for example, of Christopher Steele, who was a college leftist, in the person of Nellie Orr, who is one of Fusion's expert Russian contractors.
to say nothing of John Brennan and it appears Andrew McCabe and who knows who all else. Diana, we are hard out of time. I know it will continue, and hopefully with your careful probing and examination of the facts, we will learn much more about who all has been behind this and to what end. Keep up the great work you do at dianawest.net and The Daily Caller and elsewhere, and come back to us next week. Next up, we will speak with Claire Lopez about the speech, the foreign policy dimensions of it, the national security strategy, and more. Straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.